The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you, and as always here Saturday mornings, a 30-minute frank, open, honest conversation about gambling and obviously gambling addiction. Joining me as always, formerly from the New Jersey Council on Compulsive Gambling, 800-GAMBLER, the sponsor of this show, and now with Epic Risk Management, is our friend Dan Trelaro. Danny, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Craig. Good morning.
Great. And really happy to have with us today a former professional rugby player who's in the UK right now and is doing a lot of work with Epic as well, and that's Mark Potter. Mark, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing great and great to be on.
Thanks. I appreciate you coming on. So you know, your story is interesting to me, and there's some parallels to me from a standpoint of, you know, you were a public figure. You lived your life as a professional rugby player, so people knew who you were. And you also wound up as a compulsive gambler, which nearly cost you everything, including your life. So I appreciate you sharing your story with us. Do you remember the first time you started to wager before it became a problem?
It was quite a strange one for me, because growing up as a kid, all I really wanted to do was play sport. And actually, I came from quite a privileged background where I was given every opportunity to do that. And leaving school, as soon as I signed into the sort of an academy contract to go and play rugby, prior to that, I hadn't really engaged in much gambling activity at all. We did the national lottery at home, me, my parents and my brother and sister, but we're talking a dollar a week, and that was kind of my only exposure to it. My dad and my granddad liked to have a very small low level punt on soccer and the odd horse race, but other than that, I didn't really know a lot about it. But as you can imagine, as soon as I went into a adult sports environment, that became very different.
Was it because you saw other guys doing it, that's how you got exposed to it, once you started your professional career?
I guess, look, sport and gambling have been intrinsically linked for a long time. So as soon as I went into that environment, we were sponsored by a gambling operator. A few of the higher profile guys had stakes in racehorses. The boys liked to go to the casino. And we actually had a betting club at our club, which was on a Thursday afternoon every week. So after training on a Thursday, we'd all shower up, have a coffee, and then go down to the local retail bookmakers, and we'd sort of pool 20 bucks each in and go from there. And it was very low level, very much a bit of a team bonding thing, and I enjoyed it. I really did.
Yeah, it's kind of like you guys getting together after work, going to have a drink, or you know, talking about girls or that kind of thing. So it was very normal. It was nothing that was kind of looked at as untoward amongst the guys or even the community that you guys lived in, right?
Very normal, absolutely. It was, we're talking once a week, 20 bucks, and my dollar a week on the National Lottery on a Saturday, less than $80-$90 a week, so $80 a month, so we're very low level, and actually really enjoyable, to be honest. You get a little bit of a buzz if we had a little group win, and we put it towards a day out on for a few drinks or whatever it was, and all very manageable, and actually I quite liked it.
So what happened? Did you go off on your own one day and have, you know, some kind of big win that made you feel like, oh, I can do this better than the other guys, I'm going to start doing it more?
So the catalyst for me, looking back, was I got injured at 19, and it was quite a serious injury, and I was looking at being out for a long period of time. And you and anybody else who's ever been involved in sport will know that that's not the greatest thing. Injuries are probably the worst part of sport, and straight away I missed what I wasn't getting. Playing, training around the boys, being around everyone every day, having a laugh. And I was actually away from that, and I missed playing, I missed competing, I missed the ups and downs of winning and losing. And actually, I was bored, and I was looking for other things to occupy my time. And I guess that was the first thing that set me off on the path that I took. Basically looking to fill a void, I think.
Yeah, we hear that a lot, Dan. You know, gambling, whether it's hiding pain or the camaraderie of other guys, or you know, celebrating wins or just having action, that gambling for a lot of us just fills a very common void, right?
Yeah, and you have, you know, I have the privilege to really get to know Potts over the last several months. And, you know, just hear a competitive athlete, someone who's spending time with his friends and, his, you know, other athletes in a group, this is something to do. And when all of that is stripped away, you know, that athlete injury that Mark just said is so critical because now you're filling that void. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we know athletes also check the box on having certain personality traits that lend themselves to developing gambling problems. And it's that competitive nature. It's that also, though, that fear of loss, that fear of failure that might motivate someone. So clearly, you know, filling that void is a huge component.
Well, I think two of the biggest things that, you know, you need the recipe to become a compulsive gambler is to be competitive and to have an ego. And yep. Every athlete I've ever met by default has both of those.
Yep.
I mean, that's just, it's the nature of being a competitive athlete, especially a professional. So what happened, Mark? You're out on injury and you start filling the void by gambling. I assume, you know, it starts small. Maybe it's a big win. And then the numbers just start kind of doubling and tripling and becoming out of control. Yeah.
Yeah, you've kind of hit the nail on the head, Craig. It was very small at first. It was to fill my afternoons, really, where I couldn't train or I was out of doing my normal day-to-day things. So I looked to fill that time with horse racing and soccer were the things that appealed to me. Very low level for the first few months, really. And then, I guess, the day everything changed, I won 14 grand off a $50, and that just changed everything. It changed how I gambled. It changed the excitement I had. I just thought I was the king of the world, and you could kind of do that all the time. And from that day forward, I went from $2 and $3 bets on horses to pass the time to $200 and $300 bets literally overnight because I had access to the money. It was winnings. I wasn't risking anything at the time. I was just spending what I'd won. So actually, that gave me a level of assuredness that
sure.
It didn't really matter if I lost or it didn't really matter if I won. But what it did was it created an environment for me that was ultimately unsustainable when the money ran out. I was only young. I wasn't earning huge amounts of money. And when the money did finally run out 6 months later, I found it really hard to go back to a manageable level of spend that was affordable to me. And actually, I didn't want to. I'd got used to those hundreds of dollars of bets per horse, and I didn't want to give that up. I didn't think I'd ever win that kind of money again with small bets. So I set off on a path of 200-300 a day at first, and slowly but surely I started to run out of money before the end of the month. I then started to borrow some money off some of the guys at the club and family and friends, and you can see where it's going. And
sure.
I then had to start looking for ways of continuing. So that was, for me, was credit, and I used credit cards and loans at first. And the next sort of 2 or 3 years really were just completely overtaken by either trying to replicate the buzz of how good it was when I first won my money, or chase my way out of debt and ultimately chase my losses, which started to happen pretty quickly.
Yeah, so I imagine you probably got to a point where now you owe a lot of people money, you're borrowing money from everybody. At any point before you hit your rock bottom, which we're definitely going to get to here in a second, did any of the guys that you were tight with or family members come to you and say, hey, Mark, there's something going on, man. You're not yourself. Let's talk. Did anyone recognize that you were doing stuff like that?
Do you know what? They didn't, really. The only thing they ever thought was that I wasn't very good with money, because I sometimes had to skip events. I sometimes didn't attend things. I never really had any access to cash, apart from the odd day here and there when I actually won a lot of money. But it just, nobody really ever asked me. There was just an assumption that I was really bad with money and I couldn't manage that myself.
Got it. And so then, you get into this hole where you're betting now far more than you can afford. You're borrowing money. It's now kind of overtaking your life. Everything you're doing is around tonight's wager, today's wager, et cetera. And then I imagine, like most of us, there's a moment, and it doesn't, and I should explain this to the audience. You know, when we talk about that, you know, the lowest moment ever, you know, or the final bet, that kind of thing. Sometimes that's a collective thing. Sometimes it's not just one. It's a period of time that ultimately, you know, grabs you by the short hairs and makes you, you know, forces you to acknowledge that you have a problem. It's not always a single bet at the end where now, okay, now you got nothing left. Sometimes it's a cumulative effect. But for you, what was that moment in time where you finally, you know, hit rock bottom and said, man, I got a problem?
I think it was, unfortunately for me, it was over such a long period of time that it had a massive impact, and actually an awful lot happened. Life events started to happen. I got a girl pregnant. We had twins. I moved to a different country to go and play in Ireland. I got myself into debt. I then obviously suddenly had bills and cars and kids to pay for, and tried to stop for a period of time, but only for a short period while I was busy and had enough going on in my brain to not have to think about gambling was I able to do it. And then actually it started to get really bad when I was in Ireland, and it went on for years, mate. It really did. I ended up sort of hiding everything that I did from my partner, which is ultimately now my wife. I never spent any time with my children. My sport went completely down the pan to the point that I never made anything of it. I eventually stole money from my boss and my employer to try and pay off some debts that I'd built up from my mortgage and other bills. And I generally just didn't see another way out. And actually, my moral compass was so far off that I thought I was doing the right thing by stealing from him. And that led to an arrest. That led to my sacking. That led to a court case. It led really to the point where I realised I had a problem with it, but not to the point that it made me stop. I actually got kicked out of my family home. As you can imagine, my wife, when she found out about all the things I'd done, I'd got sacked, I'd borrowed money, I hadn't paid our mortgage, almost got us kicked out of our family home. All because I didn't ever understand my relationship with gambling. Even the day I went to court and I was convicted of theft, fraud and forgery, because I stole checks from my employer and I signed them, forged them in his name. All of that leading up to that never made me want to stop gambling. It really didn't. And I almost went to prison. I got a 3-year suspended sentence and some community service, which is quite a common thing over here. Moved back to the UK, and at that point, given the fact that my sport career had gone down the pan because of gambling, I borrowed money from gangsters and was almost killed because of gambling, only from getting bailed out from a friend. I should have, could have probably gone to prison because of my gambling. I missed my daughter's birth because of it. None of that ever made me want to stop. Actually, the catalyst for me and my rock bottom was 6 months after it, after I begged my wife and kids to give me another chance. Even after all the things I'd done, they moved over to the UK from Ireland. And the minute they went back to Ireland to visit her parents, I ended up selling all of my kids' toys and my wife's engagement ring because I needed to put money on a horse. I felt like at the time it was the right thing to do. I thought I would win enough money to win it and buy the items back before she came home, and clearly that didn't happen. And then I ended up trashing my house and sitting on my sofa so angry, thinking I was the unluckiest man in the world, thinking that everything conspired against me. And actually, when I ran out of steam and ran out of adrenaline from that time, it was the first time, and this was 14 years after I placed my first wager really and won my first significant amount of money, that I ever looked at myself and thought, do you know what, this is so bad that it needs to stop. Because I could live with all the other things, but I couldn't live with the fact that I'd sold my 4-year-old twins' toys to place a bet on a horse. And that was, it was pretty bad, if I'm honest.
We're going to continue the story in just 1 second. You're listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Happy to have Mark Potter on the phone. He's out in the UK right now, former professional rugby player and compulsive gambler, as I am. And, of course, Dan Trillaro, Epic Risk Management, joins us as well. So where we left off there, Mark, you had finally kind of reached your rock bottom. I guess a lot of shame involved with selling your kids' toys, selling the engagement ring, and basically losing everything all because of your desire to gamble. So I want to be clear, I can relate to all that, and I totally get where you're coming from, and I've actually walked the same path that you've walked from the standpoint of making really stupid decisions, especially when you look back on it now with great clarity. One aspect of your story that I do think is important to tell is that you did contemplate not waking up the next morning, that was the way out, that was for you, you know, the final day. And I wonder if you mind walking us through the emotions of contemplating, you know, leaving your kids without a dad and obviously your wife and all that stuff when you drove to the bridge and contemplated jumping off of it.
Yeah, mate, I remember it vividly, obviously. I mean, I just obviously spent my last dollar and I was sat in my house, which I'd completely trashed, and I just didn't know. I think the things that were going on in my mind were, I wanted to stop at that point, but I didn't know how I could possibly do it because it's all I'd done for the last 14 years. And equally, and probably worse than that, is I didn't know how I could ever look my wife and kids in the eye when they got home from the holiday and explain, given all of the things I'd previously done, what I'd done again. And that eventually was just a bit, I think it was a bit too much. And the day before they came back from the trip, I just got up one morning, sat staring at the wall, and then picked up my keys and drove to a train station, sat on the bridge and tried to psych myself up to jump off it. And I remember sitting there for a couple of hours, and actually there was a lot going through my head. It was going through my head that I didn't particularly want to do it, if I'm honest, but I just thought that I didn't know how I could possibly deal with what I knew was going to come when they came home. And I certainly didn't know how I could ever find a way of stopping gambling, which essentially had took over the complete majority of my life for the last 14 years, all of my adult life. And that was the reason why I was sat there, really. For whatever reason, I genuinely tried to psych myself up to be able to do it. And for whatever reason, I couldn't. And I ended up getting down and driving to my mum and dad's house and just going in and apologising to them and telling them everything that I'd ever done. And I was sorry and I'd had enough, but I didn't know what to do and I needed some help. And I was really lucky that they're great parents, and they obviously were relieved that I'd finally come to that decision that I'd had enough. They could obviously see for the last few years what I was doing wasn't great, but didn't know what to do and how to help, really.
Sure.
And they just said, thank God you finally got there. And I'd explained where I'd been and I just said, look, I need some help. And actually I went to bed that night, and I always remember it because gambling is so tough mentally for me. I never slept for about 5 years previous to this day, and it was a constant cycle of worrying about people finding out, people realizing I hadn't paid bills, hiding it from my friends, partner, whoever it was. It was almost like a full-time job on the side.
It's more than that. I'm with you on that, man.
I ended up paying the postman to not put mail through my door. I ended up pulling the house phone cord slightly out of the wall so people wouldn't ring us and ask for money. It was so difficult. But actually, when I went to bed that night after I got it all off my chest, I just slept like a baby for the first time for years. Mm-hmm. And when I woke up in the morning, my mum had rang a treatment facility, which I was really lucky to have access to because of through my sport, which is Sporting Chance Clinic in the UK, which is set up by a very high-profile soccer player who was Arsenal and England captain, Tony Adams, who had his own issues with alcohol. And he'd set it up for sportsmen that had issues with addictions. And I went there for 5 weeks and I got everything that I needed to get to be able to form a new path, really. And I got counselling, psychotherapy, everything I had was great. But for me, the biggest thing was understanding the reasons why I did what I did. And for me, through the sport, and you can obviously relate to this, I was so competitive that I hated losing. And when I took that into my gambling, it kind of came with it. And every time when I won, I thought it was great. When I lost, I didn't want to be seen as a loser to myself more than anything. And that sort of kept me going. I also obviously got injured, which meant I missed all of the things that I needed out of sport. And actually, all the things you need out of sport is very similar to what you can find with gambling, which was the competitive edge, the ups and downs of winning and losing was really similar to what I found in the bookmakers. And actually, I think that filled a massive void for me for a while. And then I obviously won a lot of money as a young kid and didn't know what to do with it, didn't know what the risks were. And actually learning to understand all that really helped me.
Sure. How do you, just out of curiosity, all these years later, how do you replace the void? Because I assume you're no longer a competitive professional athlete. So what do you do for to kind of fill the need to compete and, you know, to do those types of things?
So I actually continued play after I came out of treatment. I actually continued playing rugby at a very low level, at a local competitive but non, obviously, professional level. And the reason I did that is because I wanted to go out of sport on my terms, because I didn't previously and I never enjoyed it. And actually the 5 years I had playing rugby after my treatment were the most I ever enjoyed it, because I could do it with a clear mind. And since then I've continued to be involved in sport. I play golf, I play some cricket. My boys love all sport and my daughter loves dancing. I spend time with them. But actually, I think the work that we do and the work that myself and Dan do now is critical in keeping me going, because I don't think I would enjoy or appreciate doing something that wasn't meaningful to me. And obviously, doing the work that we do now is sure very much that. So I love doing what I do.
No, yeah. I think the work you guys do is so important. You know, shows like this are important because, as you know, here in the States now, you know, the proliferation of legalized gambling means there's tens of millions of people, especially young men, you know, filled with testosterone and ego and competitive nature, are now going to gamble maybe for the first time. And there's a group of those men that are obviously going to wind up having some type of problem. You know, one of the things we talk about on this show, which is important, and I'm glad you shared your story, because you had a 14-year run where gambling was everything and took over your life, and yet here you are now having conquered the addiction and speaking out about it, and life is good, and you are married, and you have your kids, and you have, I imagine, some level of financial security that you didn't have during those 14 years. And I always try to emphasize that there's a lot of people that are at day one, that they acknowledge they've got a problem. Okay, I got a problem. How do I get help? And, you know, is there a future? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? So I'd hope you'd share just a thought or two for those people that are just starting their journey to getting help, that, hey, you can figure this out and you can get help.
Important. I think for those who are about to start gambling in general, I would always advise people to do so knowing what the risks are and be fully educated about what that looks like, and very much advocate gambling responsibly or safely. For those that are sort of tipping the scales into the more dangerous, abusive, disordered zone of gambling, I think it's just about recognizing that what you're doing isn't healthy, being brave enough to ask for help, because that's, especially for, as you said, for young guys full of testosterone and ego, that's not always an easy thing, to ask for help and admit that you've got, that things aren't going according to plan and actually you could do with a bit of help and support. I think actually the more you do these shows and the more educational stuff that we do at Epic, and the more high profile guys come out and say, actually it's okay to not be okay sometimes. And I think the more we can normalize this and get it out into the open, the more people will feel comfortable in coming to you with their own struggles. And I think for me, it's about being open and honest. And even if you're gambling, it's about being open and honest with your gambling, because that's what I didn't do for 14 years. Everything about it for me was secretive, and yeah, it was about doing things behind people's backs or trying to win my way out of trouble or solve my own problems. And I'm sure you guys can both relate, is when you're in the middle of a problem gambling cycle, it's really difficult to solve your own problems. So I think it's being open and honest, accessing any sort of educational material, any sort of treatment support that you can. There's loads of things you can do. There's treatment, there's Gamblers Anonymous. Everything works different for different people, but it's try all those things out, see what works for you, and find a method and stick with it, and just be open and honest. And because the more open and honest you are, the more people know about your struggles, yep, the harder it is to go back to them, I think.
And as I always say, and Dan and I talk about before we wrap it up here, every one of us has a phone. And if you use it and call somebody, I don't care who that person is, it's better than the alternative for sure. Well, Mark, listen, I appreciate you coming on, sharing the story. I look forward to meeting you when you come out to the States. And I agree with you. The more people, especially high-profile people like myself, like you, other people that have a platform and an audience to speak to, we can get rid of some of the untrue stereotypes of what gamblers go through and make it easier for other people to come forward and just be honest about their problems. And I'm with you 100% of that. And I appreciate your time today very much. Thank you for sharing.
No worries, guys. Appreciate all that you're doing. And thanks for having me.
Dan, always, I know you didn't have a lot to say today, but I thought it was important for Mark to tell a story. And always appreciate you coming on as well.
Absolutely. Mark does a great job. And, you know, his story just resonates. And, you know, we have a lot of work to do ahead of us at reducing stigma. That's kind of like the end takeaway that I have is we're working to reduce stigma. And just like MTV has had its PSA now since April, mental health is health, too. You know, we need to be talking about these things. And with our young people, like you've said, Craig, 21 to 25, even younger, we need to get the word out that it's okay to not be okay and to ask for help. So great job. I'm pausing you today.
Dan, I think that was well said. I do want to share one quick story, and I know we're kind of running a little bit late on time. I got an email from a mom and a dad this week who have a 21-year-old son who has a gambling problem. And the email I got is one of the most emotional emails I've ever read, that they didn't know how to help their son. And they recognize that he has a problem. And I spoke with them. I spoke with their son, and Dan did as well. And I just want to let people out there know that, you know, I always talk about pick up the phone and call someone. There is help available. And whether you're the loved one, the mom, the dad, the sister, the brother, aunt, uncle, et cetera, of someone who's got a problem, or you're the person that has the problem yourself, you know, you can email me. You can reach out to Dan at Epic Risk Management. You got to just pick up the phone and find some way to get in touch with somebody. And I feel very privileged to have Dan in my life and be able to reach out to you, Dan, because, as you know, there's this kid, and there's a lot of kids like him who don't know how to get help. And if you don't reach out and talk to them, they may never get help. And I just felt so good this week that, A, that this family reached out to me. B, we were able to connect you to them. And I talked to the young man about a half hour last night. And I know you're talking to him this week as well. And you hear the sense of desperation and, you know, thanks that someone's willing to try to help. And I just encourage everybody to reach out to someone. You know, my email is very public. It's craig.carton@odyssey.com. Obviously, I'm on Twitter. And there is help out there. And I felt really good that we were able to talk to this young man and his family and start the process for him to get help.
Yeah, Craig, you know, that one really hit me as well. You know, and thank you. You know, I'm very thankful, not just for this show and just for our friendship and just kind of be able to work together to help get people that hope, right? We're just trying to give hope where there's no hope at times. And when I talked to the parents and heard about the young man, it reminded me so much of me when I was his age. There were so many parallels. And it just hopefully shows people and lets people know who are listening, you're not alone. There are so many people that can relate and that can be there to support. You just have to pick up the phone, whether it's 800-GAMBLER, whether it's, you know, reaching out to Craig directly, whether it's reaching out to me, you know, just pick up the phone and ask for help. And the support services are there. That was a real emotional one. I agree with you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the work you do. I look forward to seeing you soon, and thank you. And that'll wrap it up for another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. We'll do it again next Saturday at 9:30. Evan Roberts is coming up next. And then Evan and I, of course, back Monday at 2 o'clock, talk about Jets, Giants, Knicks, and everything in between. Have a great rest of your weekend, and thank you for joining us here on The Fan.